You're listening to KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Vic Roberts, the owner of Victor Hugo Winery. Hi, Vic.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for coming out again.
You're welcome. Interesting days compounded by the recent fires up in Northern California, Santa Clara, San Mateo County, with the smoke wafting down here all the way to the Central Coast, has horrifically affected you guys in ways you don't even quite know the depth of yet.
Well, unfortunately, that's absolutely correct. We won't really know the extent of any smoke taint for months, for sure. And even trying to evaluate fruits for potential smoke taint is more complicated than it seems. It's actually almost impossible to do in advance.
You have your fires, let's say, at their full throttle, and the smoke wafts down here to the Central Coast and then filters down onto your grapes. Why could you not wash the smoke off?
They've actually done experimentation with exactly that. I actually sat in on a Zoom session with COG, California Association of Wine Grape Growers, recently. Dr. Anita Oberholster from UC Davis was one of the hosts of the panel, and she's done a lot of research on smoke taint and how it affects grapes, mediation methods, which they're still working on, unfortunately. So they have done exactly that. People have attempted to come through and wash the fruit. People have come through and attempted to bathe the fruit in organic stylet oils, both pre or post smoke event. If they knew it was coming, like you're watching the news and you see the smoke direction, even though you may not have fires, it's going to come your way in 2 or 3 days. People have tried remediation methods in the vineyard in advance of smoke arriving.
And what would they do?
Well, basically, they were trying a number of different oils, stylet and otherwise, to actually try to...
To pre-coat
the grapes, to capture some of the smoke so then they could be subsequently washed or rinsed in some manner, rinsing immediately after the smoke event. None of these methods seem to show any difference between the control and the treated fruit.
So bottom line, you're stuck with smoke.
Right. So, you know, they've done a lot of research both at Davis, and they've done a fair amount of research in Australia because they've been plagued by the same thing with wildfires. And what they have found so far, they haven't found a remediation method. They haven't found a remediation method for the wines that appears to be effective all the time. What they have found is it appears that the age of the smoke has a huge impact, and it appears to be smoke that's older than 24 hours actually, within reason, has very limited effect on fruit.
So this is airborne, floating, smoke, wafting down the coast.
Yes. So in this instance, I'm not entirely sure how long it was between, and the smoke we saw, I'm sure, was primarily from the fires in Monterey County, the River Fire near Salinas, the Dolan Fire near Big Sur. There was a third fire, which is escaping right now, because they were all sparked by these, you know, 600 wildfires were sparked in California in about 24 hours, all lightning, you know, thunderstorm lightning events. There were three actually in San Luis County. We are very fortunate with the air tanker division at Paso Robles Airport. The ones in San Luis County were all out in less than 24 hours. It wasn't actually smoke from this area, but it was smoke coming down from Monterey County. And but, you know, realistically, in the big picture, the growers here, I don't think have a ton of things to worry about in that. I mean, of course, I'm judging it by what we saw here in Templeton. And, you know, further north, San Miguel might have seen a little more smoke. But we had two bad days and one horrendous day. And that was really it. Started, on a Wednesday. Thursday was horrific. Friday was terrible. By Saturday, yes, there was a slight haze from smoke. But we were doing outdoor wine tasting, which, of course, is the only way we do wine tastings right now because of the pandemic. But, you know, people were enjoying themselves and didn't seem to have any problem with the slight level. And actually, we just had, other than those 3 days, we had a couple days of moderate air quality, and then we've been good air quality continuously for the past couple of weeks now. So I don't think we're going to have a huge issue. But the, you know, to follow up on the smoke taint issue, you don't really know, because at this present moment, there's not a way to taste the fruit and say, oh yeah, that's got smoke taint, or to actually have the fruit analyzed, because smoke's components are a class of compounds called volatile phenols. And they actually, when they settle on the fruit, they bind with both the skins, the color, and tannins in the skins, and the sugar. So they aren't released until fermentation. In other words, until fermentation actually happens and the sugar is converted to alcohol, these smoke compounds, or a whole group of compounds called volatile phenols, they aren't actually released from the reaction that they've formed with the grape skins and the grape sugars until fermentation.
So they're little time bombs, and you don't know how they're going to go off until you've processed and done fermentation, correct?
To a large degree, that's true. What they have done, and have had some success in correlating what might happen in the large-scale fermentation, is they've suggested growers pick fruit at, you know, a minimum of about 22% sugar, 22 Brix, which, you know, normal red wine fermentation would be, you know, 24 to 26 sugar at harvest. So they're saying pick it early, like 7 to 10 days early, do a little micro-fermentation, and then you can take that wine from that micro-fermentation 7, 10 days later, before you're still harvesting your large lot out of the vineyard, and you can then take it to the lab, because if those compounds are in your micro-fermentation wine, they are highly likely to be in the wine made from the larger batch.
In a worst-case scenario, the other day you were saying you could wind up with a product in the end that tastes like an ashtray.
That's pretty accurate. Yeah, unsaleable. And they've tried remediation efforts in the winery once smoke taint starts to show up. And it's not immediate. It may take months to show up in the wine after fermentation, or even longer. They've tried flash pasteurization, reverse osmosis, spinning cone centrifuge. None of these methods seem to affect the level in the wine. The only thing that they have been able to remove it with is activated carbon, which, of course, is a legal additive to wine for fining. But unfortunately, activated carbon is relatively harsh and removes a lot of your beneficial aromatics as well. So you will turn up with a wine that doesn't have the ashtray campfire aromatic and flavor, but it doesn't have what it had or should have had.
So pretty boring.
Pretty boring.
Okay, so here you are. You are a grower. You have approximately 80 acres of grapes that you tend and manage and harvest. And right now you're in the early days of harvesting. The only way you can proceed is based on your little test batches?
That's the only thing that's going to give you any indication.
So if you take that 21 Brix little micro-harvest and you ferment and you lab test and it comes back negative, does that mean that acre of 2 tons or 3 tons of grapes you let rot on the vine?
If it comes back with a high level, so it's not a 0 or 100. It's a, you know, it's a scale. And at lower levels, even in your test fermentation, you're probably going to have very low levels in your tank fermentation, large batch fermentation, and it's not going to be an issue. It's, in other words, it's below threshold. So this is all, until they get to a certain level, you're not going to pick it up in the wine. So, and it's not quite as dire as I, you know, it's not a 0 or 100. You know, if you have a small amount, that doesn't mean the whole batch is ruined. A small amount is never going to, that you can pick it up in the lab, but if you can't pick it up from a sensory evaluation, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, the lab number doesn't really matter. It's sensory evaluation is what.
Yeah, same thing with harvest, right? It's really biting the seed and tasting the grape as much as it is your numbers and analytics.
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, are the vines in good shape? You know, are they going to handle the fruit being on for another 5 to 7 days? Does the fruit taste the way you want it to now? You know, the absolute numbers are a guideline, but, you know, they're not the only thing you use when you pick.
So they're always throwing some wrench at you, aren't they?
It's not boring. It's not boring. So, and winemaking, wine grape growing, a lot of people forget, but it's really very specialized farming. And farmers are kind of used to these things happening. You can have completely unpredicted events. I mean, you can have insect pests. You would never think grasshoppers. Well, you can have. You can have grasshoppers come in such numbers they'll actually strip the vines of leaves. Thank goodness we haven't had one of these events in this county in probably 30 years, but there were some times that it did happen. So, early rain, early freeze.
And the birds are your buddies.
Birds are always a problem. So here we net the entire vineyard over the course of a few weeks. It's a 99% effective method to keep the birds off of your fruit. It's also neighbor friendly. You know, some of your other efforts to keep birds off include, some type of noisemakers, shotguns, scare balloons, Mylar tape. They're all effective, but we found netting to be the most effective of all of them, also the quietest for the neighbors.
All said and done, back to smoke and harvest. Does that imply that you have to do these little micro fermented batches as you go through your vines, or could you do a block and your comes in good, so you're good to go for that whole area?
Well, again, during the meeting that we all attended via Zoom, is they did say, unfortunately, I guess if you had a perfectly tabletop flat vineyard with no differences in, wind or elevation or lack of wind, you could probably do one sample for the entire vineyard. But, with topography we have in most of the vineyards in Paso Robles, you have, even within a relatively small vineyard, you'll have markedly different topography.
So hilltops might take the brunt.
It could, absolutely. So in other words, the only true way to do it is to be 100% confident, the only way is to do small batch fermentations for each harvest block that you intend to do, or at least every other harvest block. If you have two side-by-side that are the same topography, you can probably get away with one. But, I think fortunately for us here in this area, I just don't think the duration or the freshness of the smoke, and to my knowledge, no one in this area had ash raining on their vineyard, which has happened in the past in other areas. The smoke has been so heavy, so long, and vineyards have actually had ash washing in. Now, one thing they did find is if you wash any ash off the fruit, that does make a difference. It doesn't necessarily save it, but it definitely minimizes the amount of smoke taint you're going to pick up from the fruit.
Vic Roberts, thanks for sharing.
My pleasure, Tom. Good seeing you again.
We've been speaking with Vic Roberts, the owner of Victor Hugo Winery in Templeton, California. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.